Podcast. My name is Corey O'Flanagan.
And my name is Leanne Davidson.
There she is.
There she is.
Quarantining.
Aren't we all? Doing it as best as we can.
You better be. So this week we've got a pretty special episode to me, anyway. As you may or may not know, we had a beautiful set of travels that we just ended about a month ago, and what inspired those for me in part was my mother, who was fighting stage 4 brain cancer for about 4.5 years. She unfortunately left us last October, but a few months before that, I was up visiting her and my dad, and knowing that they had had such an amazing time backpacking through Europe and North Africa and then over to Colombia in the early 70s, 72 or 73, I sat down and interviewed them, and was just kind of fascinated by the differences.
Oh my god, it's so different. They're like, they traveled during like real wild country, you know, no phones, no internet, nothing.
Just straight hippies going at it.
But it's really good to hear a recap of it as well, and I'm sure everyone else will enjoy it too. Yeah. So, without further ado, Mr. and Mrs. O'Flanagan.
It was 1973.
Yep.
How long had you guys known each other?
When did you,
A year and a half.
Yeah.
So you knew each other a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Had you been planning to do something and you tagged along, or how'd that work?
We planned this to do this together.
Okay.
Most of the people at the farm.
Mom was going out with Kevin Lawton, and he was planning on traveling around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And he took off in the summer of 72 and went to Europe. And your mom actually went over and spent
six weeks
with Kevin traveling through Southern Europe.
A year before?
No, right before we left, before you and I left. I got back in May or June.
And we left the same year?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it was 73, not 72.
Right.
So what were you guys doing for work? How'd you save money?
I worked at the phone office.
We were dealing drugs.
Okay.
Selling pot at the local bars.
Working for cash. Got it.
And I was also attending bar. Your mom was working at the phone company.
Mm-hmm.
And you were able to just let them know I'm going to take off extended periods of time?
I asked for my time, that much time off. And they didn't guarantee that I'd get my job back. But I went anyway because we really wanted to go. So, and it was no problem when I came back. I got
That's
my job
kind of what
back.
You got to do is you just kind of got to say, fuck
you just
it.
Do it.
Really.
Yeah. So we worked for 6 months or more, probably closer to a year, saving money as much as we could for the trip. And then buying equipment, basically backpack and tent and everything we needed in two backpacks.
So it was legit backpacking. Is that where you guys were camping most of the time, or you're staying in hostels?
No, we stayed
hostels,
in hostels.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you remember how much about they were?
10 or 15 bucks, maybe.
No, not
five.
Even a few dollars.
And that's in main European countries and cities?
Yeah.
Okay. How'd you decide where you wanted to go?
Well, I wanted to go back to a little bit in Germany, and I wanted to travel in Southern Europe a little bit. And then we wanted to go to North Africa.
Okay.
And I wanted to go to Switzerland.
You wanted to go to the Alps?
I wanted to go back to Switzerland.
But you said warm weather, because it was later in the year, so you guys were looking
weather,
to escape a winter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I went with a friend of mine who I graduated from high school with, who had been in the military. He was in the Marines, and I'd been in the Army, and we hadn't seen much of each other, but we got back together a little bit that summer, and I asked him if he wanted to travel in Europe a little bit, and he said he'd go along.
Did you guys know anybody who had done it? Like, what sprung, where did the idea just, do you remember that moment where it was like, this is what we want to go do?
Mm-mm, it wasn't like that.
I'd been in 1970, I was in the Army in Germany for a year, and a friend of mine, an Eskimo, Chuck Evans, and I traveled for about a month. We took a month off on leave and traveled throughout Central, Southern Europe, and then over into England, and then back up to through the Netherlands, back up to Germany where we were stationed. And I really enjoyed that trip and wanted to do it some more.
Yeah,
that's where I was kind of coming from. I wanted to go back because I enjoyed it so much.
Got the travel bug.
Yeah, I would have never done it if it wouldn't have been for following him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you'd went earlier with Kevin, but you needed the catalyst.
Right. Exactly. And Kevin always had that travel bug.
Well, you said you wanted to go to Switzerland, you wanted to go to North Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Were you guys able to, like, nowadays we can just research so much.
Mm-hmm.
Like, did you guys know anything about where you were going or why you wanted to go there? Was it just word of mouth?
Yeah. For me, Switzerland was just the scenery, the Alps, and, you know, the train rides and that kind of stuff there. And we stayed at a really neat place in Switzerland, and I just wanted to go back there and find it, but I never found it.
Mm.
So anyhow, that was my agenda.
And I wanted to go ride the Marrakesh Express.
Okay.
Had you heard a song by Crosby, Stills, and Nash, right? And I thought, hey, it's a different culture. The Muslim, I'd like to see that, and I'd like to go to Morocco and go to Marrakesh.
Was the, because I've read, like, the Keith Richards autobiography now, mm-hmm. so, and I know that the Stones made a trip down there in, like, the late 60s, early 70s. Did you know about that? And you were like,
no.
Okay.
Didn't know about that. We just knew we wanted to do that.
And then you guys took off at separate times, right?
Right.
You left earlier?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Tell me how that worked. How did that communication to find you at the airport? This is so easy now. But it's definitely not easy then. How did that work?
Well, we stayed in touch. O'Gleary wrote probably several letters a week.
Did I write that many? Yeah. I was bored.
How'd you know where to send them, though, if you're bumming around to different places?
Send them to the American Embassy.
I told her that I was probably going to go to Germany and then down into Italy and then into Spain. And Cliff and I were going to travel into southern Spain, probably down to Marbella.
Okay.
In southern Spain. And so she had an idea of kind of where we were going. And we would be going through Barcelona. And so there was places she could, embassies where she could send these, and I could check.
So you just get to the city, go to the embassy.
And go to the embassy and check
for anything with my name on it.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, any mail. So
and then the other thing is that Tom and Stick were over there at the same time, and I was communicating with them, trying to line up a date when we'd all meet at the airport in Paris. And it actually worked out.
So you were over there at the same time as them, but they
left.
They were in different
they actually
places.
Left a couple weeks before Cliff and I did.
Okay.
Yeah, and we were going to meet them in an Oktoberfest in Munich, and they didn't hang around. They took off. So when we got to Munich, we looked all over for them, and we couldn't find them anywhere. So, and they didn't leave any messages or anything. So they were gone. So then we just went on our own merry way.
Any ability to do a phone call or anything like that? I mean, long distance, I'm sure, was crazy expensive.
You could, but we didn't.
Mm-mm.
We just did what they called aerograms. And it was a specific type of...
And there's some folded up in there.
Post office documents. And it came with postage already on them, 15 cents.
Mm-hmm.
And then you would just fold them up and get the address on there.
Did
and so here, this one was sent to me. At the address of the embassy in Barcelona.
I guess what I'm curious about is, like, when you booked your flight, you don't know where, you have an idea where he wants to be, but you don't know his timeline, you don't know anything mm-hmm. like that. You flew into Paris?
Mm-hmm.
How does he find you?
How
do you know
that?
What day and
how
what
did
flight?
We figure that out? Do you remember?
It probably says in one of these letters here, but she said she was coming in on a certain day on a certain airline into Paris. And she also somehow got that same message to Tom and Stick. They were in Greece, one or both of them injured, because they'd
rented more pens,
drank some ouzo, and did some over-the-counter stuff you could buy that were like Quaaludes, but I can't remember what they were called now, but they both rented mopeds and fucking hit crashes.
That does still happen. When we were in Colombia a couple years ago, my buddy Mikey crashed, but he was just sober. He just took a wide turn, but that's just funny. There's some things that are timeless.
So anyway, I think in Athens or somewhere, you wrote Tom and Stick
mm-hmm.
and said, okay, I'm coming in to Paris on this day, and Barry's going to meet me there.
Mm-hmm.
And then they booked a flight from Athens to
Paris.
To Paris. They had one stop. Mm-hmm. But anyway, yeah, they got into Paris.
And I flew into London. And then I flew from London to Paris.
Do you have any idea what those flights cost?
Oh, they were like...
Not very much.
I think the round trip flights then were $200-$300.
From like London to Paris?
No, like from Icelandic, from Minneapolis.
I was going to say $1,200.
And most, no, they weren't that much. And most of them flew into either Iceland. Brussels yeah. or, what was the other? Luxembourg.
Luxembourg.
Most of the flights in Icelandic Airways had a real cheap flight.
And they called it the hippie airline. Mm-hmm.
From Minneapolis, you'd stop in Reykjavik. They'd have a layover there so you could go in and buy shit from the an Iceland duty-free shop, mm-hmm. and then they'd fly you to Luxembourg, and that's where Cliff and I flew into.
And then, was it mostly trains and buses when you got over there to get from place to place?
Trains.
Yeah. Trains almost always.
Mostly trains. Mm-hmm.
Remember what those tickets were?
No, we had your rail passes though.
Yeah, okay. They didn't have
They had those then.
Every country had a different.
Had their own currency.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, did you have expectations, or because there was, I guess we have just so much access to knowledge now that as I'm getting ready to travel, I can build up an expectation of what I think it might be like. Mm-hmm. Did you guys have, I mean, you'd been there before.
Did
you have that ability? Mm-hmm. So you just kind of went open-ended? And
I just went.
When she went with Kevin, she kind of found out what it was like traveling around. Because they hitchhiked a little bit.
We hitchhiked a lot.
Yeah.
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 That's still pretty, that's still out there. It's not as prominent, but it still exists. I'm really just curious about the costs. Like, the Eurorail, they still have a Eurorail, I believe. I haven't done
that
too
went
much.
To, you had these books that you could do Europe on, what, $5 a day or $10
it was, yeah,
a day?
You could, think we were buying them books for $50, $100, and you could get, like, several weeks' worth of travel out of that.
So what, you pay that flat rate? And then you just go until you use it?
Right, and you use it, right.
And then we traveled.
You paid that, and you got a certain amount of travel out of it.
Okay.
And then whenever you went, they'd stamp it until it was used up.
Okay.
And the student IDs, mine was fraudulent. I don't know if yours was or not. But I remember I got one, and then one guy looked at it, and he said, "This is not authentic." And I said, "Well, that's my picture, and that's me." So he let me through.
Did you feel like there was a lot of people doing it? Like, one of the things that'll happen when I'll go somewhere is there's obviously a lot of people backpacking, but people will get on certain paths, and it's like you'll see somebody in a city, maybe go out and have a fun night with them or something like that, or go on some trek or tour of something, but then they leave, you're going to be there for another couple days, and then you see them in the next city again.
Yeah.
No, we never had that.
So hang on, you get to Paris. Somehow everyone meets.
Yeah.
So she had gotten the letter out to Tom and Stick, and they decided, the heck with it, we want to go back to Paris and meet these guys. So then they arrange flights, and they come in like the day ahead of time. And I rode a train all the way up by myself because Cliff didn't want to go because it's a long ways from southern Spain to northern France.
Yeah.
And so I rode a train for like, I don't know what it was, 2.5-3 days up, coming up. They didn't have the Schnellzug, you know, the fast trains then. In fact, some of the trains we got on, they had crates with chickens and families.
America.
You know, very...
That was more in Colombia, though.
No, that was in Spain.
Was it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Anyway, I rode up there for 3 days, and then I went into the airport. I think it was the night before. I thought, I'm not going to rent the place. I'll just go to the airport and sleep there. And to go up to the area where the passengers came in, you know, got off the plane, they charge you, I don't know how many
francs
it was. But I thought, oh, I'm not going to pay that now. I'll just stay here. I'm at the bottom of the stairs. Boy, he's got to come down the stairs.
Yeah.
So I'm laying on a couch at the bottom of those stairs. And the next morning, I'm kind of wake up, and I'm just laying there, and I look up, and there's Stick at the top of the stairs starting to walk down. And I never knew they were there. I never imagined they got any message from Gloria. I didn't expect to see them. So that was a big reunion to see.
That's fun.
And so then I paid the couple francs and went up the stairs with him. And then Tom was up there. And they had both slept the night up there. And I was at the bottom of the stairs. We didn't know each other was there. So we had a big reunion. And then right in the middle of that, while we're still saying, how'd this happen? How the hell did you get here? Gloria walks off the plane.
Oh, really?
Comes walking out. So then we had a big reunion there at the airport.
Yeah. That's really cool.
That's just a lot of good feelings.
Is that?
Yeah. Oh, God. That was
ran
really,
across the boardwalk, going up to the Eiffel Tower singing Hey, Hey, We're the Monkeys.
And then we went downtown, started bar hopping and drinking wine, singing and running and jumping. And
That had was a fun
had
day.
Had a wonderful day.
I mean, you guys were all, what, like 23, 24?
Right, mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were young.
Yeah, what a crazy... I mean, that's the kind of thing that I don't think that we get anymore.
I remember when we got into Luxembourg, Cliff and I stayed in this little room, tiny room, skinny little beds, and when he got up in the morning and went to the bathroom, he says, God damn it, he says. He says, there's toilet paper here. It's like wax paper. You can't wipe yourself. You just smear it all over.
Tell him the story about stick with the washcloth on the airplane.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because it was an overnight flight. And in the morning, they bring you a rolled up warm washcloth.
Yeah, stick. He's got this big head of bushy hair, big long beard. He just looks like a Viking.
He looks like.
And he's snoring away. And then the stewardess comes by in the morning when him and Tom went over to wake him up. And she's got
a tray
with warm washcloths on it. Well, he wakes up and just shakes his head and looks at it and grabs a washcloth and tries to eat it. He thinks they're giving him food right away.
Only stick.
And then, oh, God. And then when we left Paris, we headed south on a train. It was, again, 2.5 to 3 days.
Long
it was a long.
Day.
But I remember the first day was the first or second day. We were in our own compartment. There might have been one person in there with us on the train. And we bought some bottles of wine. We were getting a pretty good buzz on in there. And Tom, we're going through town real slow, and he's sticking his head out. He's got this big bushy head of hair to him.
Curly,
sticking his head
curly.
Out and hollering, trying to speak in Spanish and hollering at everybody to go by. Finally, somebody picked up a handful of rocks and threw them at him. And he comes back in, he's got rocks in his hair. But you know, another thing that I remember from back then is that there was a lot of Canadians traveling. In fact, there was Americans who had, in their backpacks, they would sew a Canadian flag on it, because even back then, Europeans were kind of down on Americans.
Nixon.
Because
Nixon,
of Nixon and some of that stuff.
Well, no, that is
and
strange.
The Vietnam War. And so Americans weren't, you know, high on the list of people that they really liked a lot over there. I mean, once they got to know you, fine, but just in general, they were a little bit down on Americans.
Just traveling like through the airports and stuff.
And so you weren't always
the American.
Real forthcoming in saying, you know, where you were from.
See, that same thing exists, but I've never, ever thought about it. And to not be like who I am and that kind of thing. Like, and I'll meet Americans who have that Canadian flag and stuff like that, and I'm just so curious about that. I'm like, I've never gotten the harassment for it. I've had people when I was over in Thailand just be like, what, how could you guys vote for Bush? Like, how is that? And I'm like, you know, I don't represent my entire country.
Right.
And I think that's what gets misconstrued.
Right,
it's like, we are a huge country.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So then when you guys got down to, North Africa, I mean, that was the first time I was in a Muslim country, was in Morocco.
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys enjoy that?
Yeah, yeah, it was very different, very strange. Well, when we left southern Spain, we tried to get Cliff and Tom and Stick to go with us, but all three of them were sick of traveling.
They were ready to go.
So when, you know, when Gloria and I left to go to South Africa, they left and flew back to the United States.
Okay.
So then, but we decided we want to go down there. We're going
to
spend at least a couple of weeks down there.
South America.
And then we had made up our minds we wanted to try to get to South America.
Okay.
And So anyway, I remember we crossed on a ferry from Gibraltar to Tangier.
Yeah.
And we went
into... I took that ferry ride.
Yeah.
Did you stay in Gibraltar at all? Did you have like a day or an afternoon there or anything?
You know, I don't remember.
We did. We stayed there, and I just remember, the thing I remember most was these monkeys. They would just like get the... Like, they would just be in the trees, and they'd swing down and, like, steal somebody's water bottle or sandwich out of their hand and stuff.
Oh,
like
yeah.
But then the ferry ride, or the boat ride, because it was a pretty big boat, was the choppiest boat ride I've ever been on.
Was
like, I didn't get seasick, but I got sick because of everyone else getting seasick.
Mm-hmm.
And it was brutal.
Yeah. I don't remember getting sick on the ride. But we stayed a night in Tangier. And when we first got in there... Do you remember what happened when we got into town? We got off the bus, and right away these little kids come up to us. They seen we're Americans. And Americans must all been coming there to buy hash. hashish. Because he said, oh, want to buy some hashish? Buy some hashish? I said, yeah. So I don't know if you stayed or no, we both went. They said, well, follow us. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, well, you don't know where you're at. You're in a strange country, strange music, strange land. Everything's strange. Mm-hmm. We followed them through the alleys and back to this cafe. Mm-hmm. And they had said, set at a table, and they got us each a cup of tea. And then they came back, and they had a pretty good-sized chunk of green Moroccan hashish.
So then you were there for, what, a couple weeks? Because I know you guys went down to Marrakesh.
Well, then, well, we went... from there, we traveled. We went to Casablanca,
mm-hmm. Okay.
And we stayed in Casablanca for maybe a few days to a week.
Yeah, I think so.
And we did some shopping there. We bought nice mm-hmm. big Moroccan robes with the big hoods on them, and went to some of the markets.
Did you travel back with them, or did you send them?
No,
we carried them with us.
We wore them.
Okay.
I think when we got back, it was like when you came back from Thailand. Mm-hmm. I think when we got home, we still had them on. We were still wearing them.
Yeah, I don't know.
Mine was yellow and purple, and Dad's was brown.
So what was the... Was there an expectation going into this? And then it, like, did it just kind of change? Was it what you expected, or was it different?
A lot different. I mean, you don't... When you go into a... Especially a Muslim country like that, and you've never been there, you don't know
yeah.
what it's mm-hmm. like. You know, with the different kind of... The music's so different, and with all the mosques culture. And praying that goes on, mm-hmm. you know, several times a day, and... The one thing I remember that stands out in my mind is all the beggars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There was so many disabled people missing legs and arms and sometimes both legs, and they're pushing themselves around on these little flat pieces of wood with casters on the bottom. So they're just getting around, and they sit on a corner and they're begging. And what you saw was that the Moroccan people that had any money would stop and give them. Mm-hmm. They were like it was like an accepted level of society to be a beggar, because they didn't have health insurance. Yeah. And the people who had gave to that people who didn't have. And so we started doing that too. We started trying mm-hmm. to give a little bit here and there. Yeah. Because it was just part of what it seemed like was expected of everybody.
Yeah, it's interesting how it varies country to country, right? Like in some places I've been to, they're like, mm-hmm. the locals would be like, no, don't do it, because you don't know for, like, if somebody's missing a limb, that's obvious, but some mm-hmm. people can just be out there doing a whole scheme
here.
Yeah.
And you just don't necessarily know. But yeah, I think I remember that too. And it's like, that's the kind of stuff that was just culture shock. I think if right. you grow up in like New York City or a bigger city in the States, you kind of get exposed to that. But mm-hmm. when you grow up in northern Wisconsin, you really don't.
No, you don't right. see people out there. Exactly. I mean, you do in the cities somewhat now, Twin Cities, mm-hmm. people standing on the corner. But that you didn't see it back then.
Mm-hmm. So then I am curious about, you guys went back. I know you went back to Germany in the early 90s after, you know, being mm-hmm. married for a long time mm-hmm. and everything like that. What were the differences there?
I expected a lot more difference than there was. And then when I got there, I thought, why would I think that this would have changed? These buildings have been here for hundreds of years, these places. You know, why did I think there was going to be so much change in how many years between those trips?
20 years.
20? Okay. Mm-hmm. That was a big thing for me, was that it just seemed the same. You know, not so much different, other than that it was a different travel thing because we stayed with the Germans. But, you know, just traveling around, it just wasn't, there was no big change to me, I expect, other than there was more fast food joints.
Since every country had a different currency, did you guys just leave America with a bunch of traveler's checks?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
And then, yeah.
Primary and then when you go to a different country, they'd have like exchange banks there, and you just exchange your money for the local currency.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when I first went to Thailand in 2002, we did traveler's checks, or at least I did. I can't remember if Anthony did. But since then, I can't remember in 2004, but since then it's just been debit cards. Mm-hmm. And you just got to let your bank know, mm-hmm. and you can just go to the ATM.
Hmm. And get the local currency.
And get the local currency. And I think you get double dinged. Like, you get hit with that specific bank to that country's charge. And then every time, I think my account hits me with like a $5 charge every time I do it. So you usually just take out the max mm-hmm. amount that you can.
Back then, though, places of business, a lot of them would take traveler's checks. They probably still do. I don't know. But you could just, if you went in to buy something or went in to eat someplace, you could sign a traveler's check, and they would give you the proper change back.
I mean, they're pretty much non-existent. I'm sure they still are there if you want to get them, but mm-hmm. I think it's more of a hassle now.
Right. Even at the end of working at
the
bank.
They are a hassle.
They are. They were just a hassle for the tellers at the bank to sell and then for the people to use. They were not an easy way of transacting money.
The one thing I remember that actually at the beginning of our trip, that fall, that late summer and fall, we had to go off to the University of Minnesota about three different times, or twice anyway, and get shots. We had to get a whole bank of shots.
How did you discover what you needed?
Because we said we were going to travel to Europe, Southern Europe, and Africa.
Just told a doctor?
Yeah, told them there, and they set up what you need. We had to get yellow fever mm-hmm. and...
What's the cholera? That was the other one.
Cholera, malaria. We had to have some malaria. We took pills along. Maybe we still do that for water and purification pills.
Yeah, we're bringing that on this trip. What about visas? Were you guys able to research, like, so for India, you can't just fly in, go through customs, and get stamped for a certain amount of time. You have to do it ahead of time.
Istanbul, Turkey was probably the only place I was at that you had to have some kind of special thing there.
Otherwise, you could just plan on just going to the border and just getting stamped. And you usually get like a 30 or 60 day or something.
Yeah. The one thing was when we left South America, remember we had to pay to get out of the country.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which we thought was kind of a rip off. But
where'd you guys fly back from?
Cartagena.
Colombia.
Oh, you did end up going over to South America straight from there.
Yeah, when we come back from Africa. So, Marrakesh, I mean, that was really neat to go
there. That's an interesting city.
That was just so African or whatever. It was exotic. It was the neatest, exotic, mm-hmm. you know. It was just very third or fourth world.
It is, too, because it's right on the cusp of the Atlas Mountains mm-hmm. and where the desert starts.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it's just kind of this unique city that sits in this spot where you do a 360-degree turn and you're seeing all these different terrains.
Yeah.
And the market there, I mean, I'm sure it hasn't changed much from when I went there and you guys were there, which is amazing.
Yeah, we took a bus from Casablanca to Marrakesh, so we did the Marrakesh Express.
Nice.
And it was crazy, because, it was just full of people. There was no bathrooms, no nothing, just this little bus. And about every couple hours, they'd stop, and everybody get out, men, women, kids, everybody go outside the bus and take a leak. you look over, here's a field out there of just sand, and some guy's out there with a camel and a one-bottom plow walking behind him. You think, wow.
What's going to grow there?
That's ancient agriculture there.
Yeah.
But then Marrakesh, we rented a place that was not very nice. Mm-hmm. The beds were
You could hear the rats
You could hear the mice and the rats.
And the bed had straw in
it. But during the day, we had fun. We went down to the market, and you probably did the same thing. Mm-hmm. And just the gold, the silver, the different kinds of... And then in the center, they had this big area where they had the entertainers come in, you know. And there was the acrobats and the magicians and the snake charmers. When we were there, they had snake charmers.
That's a big open area, wasn't it?
Yeah.
No, I was in the exact same one. That's such a... I just remember walking through it, and it was just complete just stimulation for like every sense. You'd be smelling all these amazing foods and spices and visually, and then you could hear everything that was going on, and it was
the
just
different
like
sounds of the music.
And the thing that always got me was when I first started traveling, like the first day that I got over to Thailand, I just remember looking at Anthony and just being like, everybody, these people are always doing this every day that we've been alive. Like, this just is going on all the time. And it just is, I don't know, it just makes you think of the world in a different way.
It does,
When we went to Niagara Falls, I thought that same thing. I thought, God, all this water, and this water runs over these falls
all day,
all the time. Where does it all come from?
But it does give you, it changes your whole perspective of the world when you go to these different places where life is so different, yet you think this has been going on for thousands of years here.
And it's
going
to continue on long after I'm gone.
And I'm up in northern Wisconsin thinking this is all what life is, but no, life is a lot more than this.
Leads me to the next question, which is, you know, how did the trip influence or change your lives when you got back from it?
For me, a lot, because I remember coming back and pointing out little tiny Canton on the map. And then looking all over all these places I'd been, And I thought, I can't believe I was at all these places. I mean, it really opened my eyes to more than just Canton. So, yeah, that was pretty cool.
Was it, I mean, I think you guys probably remember when I got back from Thailand, all I could think about was, what do I need to do to go travel again? Mm-hmm. Were you guys kind of in that mindset, or did you get back here and just kind of get comfortable?
No, I think because we were a little younger, so I think, I know I was ready to come back home. When we left Colombia, we were ready to get back here. It was Christmas time, and you know, we were short on money, and we had to call Grandma O to get some money sent down to us, and that was a hassle.
Mm-hmm. So, was that Western Union?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you had to wire the money.
Yeah.
And you had to find a telephone person that you could understand that can speak English in order to get your message across, and that wasn't easy. So it was a lot more difficult than it is now. Just cumbersome, not really difficult, just more to it.
Yeah, I mean, that's really what it was, is our access to the information and our devices and everything just make it so that we have the expectation of things happening faster, where for you guys, you might just be like, well, it might take us this week to get money.
Yeah, and it literally took us a week to 2 weeks to get the money.
I think it took more than a week.
But yeah, that Marrakesh for me was, that was still a great memory. Mm-hmm. And you know what I enjoyed was the bargaining. You know, instead of just going in and offering a price, you bargain. Mm-hmm. You know, and that they expect you to bargain.
Yeah, it's a game. I like that.
Yeah. And we had never done that. You know, and we learned it in Casablanca when we were out shopping there, that you got to bargain for this stuff. You can get the price way down to where it should be.
One picture I remember is sitting on top of that building that we stayed at, and I was piercing your ear.
Mm-hmm. And the Atlas Mountains are in the background.
Right. That was the only picture I can remember of that trip. Yeah. And there was these cakes that they had that had like sweet topping on them, like the cinnamon bagels at Pandora.
Yeah.
Panera.
Yeah, that's another thing that I was surprised at. Well, in Europe, you know, the bread is really good. Mm-hmm. And in Africa, I didn't know what to expect, but it was delicious. Just very wholesome and filling, you know, not like the bread we have in this country.
Well, there was that. I remember the Moroccan tea and a lot of that stuff. They just had a ton of sugar and everything. Mm-hmm. I remember that a lot about Morocco.
Yeah. You remember all the old guys sitting around with a long stem pipes with a little thing on the end, they were smoking keef, which I don't know what the hell that was.
I actually had that when I was there.
Is it like a hashish or something?
Yeah, it was like a different kind of high. It wasn't tobacco, because I hate the buzz from tobacco. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember that sensation like coming over me like I was going to throw up. But I just remember it just wasn't like smoking regular weed or hash or something, but it was just like lighter. Mm-hmm. Or something like that. But yeah, they would smoke that all day.
And drink that green tea.
Yeah.
Mellow life.
Yeah.
Mellow life.
So you flew up from Casablanca over to Colombia?
No, we went back up to...
Barranquilla?
No, we went back up to Spain, and we...
Oh, that's right.
I don't know if we went back up to Lisbon. Did we go to Lisbon? Anyway, we were trying to find a ocean liner, like a freighter with passengers, to go from Spain or Portugal to South America.
Because we heard you could get cheap passage.
Because we heard that you could find, you know, that there was passage.
I heard the same thing.
And we looked and looked and looked, and we couldn't find anything. So finally we said, okay, we're going to go, because off the west coast of Africa is the Canary Islands. And we'd heard that there's a lot of shipping lanes by there, and they stop by a lot. So what we did is booked a passage on a passenger ship from, it must have been Gibraltar, southern of Spain. But then we went down to, we took it was like a 3 day or 2 or 3 day boat trip down to the Canary Islands to Las Palmas, rough the capital.
Just not nice accommodations at all, you know. We're down in the...
We were trying to travel cheap.
Yeah.
In the Canary Islands, there's nothing cheap there.
That's a big European tourist destination.
Yeah, they get you on.
We got there.
Were they pretty, though?
Yeah. Yeah, it was nice. Nice, beautiful islands, you know.
Very
pretty
nice, high-class resort place.
Yeah, yeah. You had to pay to sit on the beach, even then, back in the early 70s, you know. It was expensive. And so then we got there and we said, well, we don't want to stay here. We don't want to go back up to Europe. the only option we had was to get a flight out of there, mm-hmm. fly from there to Columbia, Barranquilla, up to Caracas, yep,
okay.
Venezuela, and then to Barranquilla, Colombia. And that took most of our money.
Right.
Yeah.
Because
it was an expensive flight. Just I think it was like $500.
One was expensive, yeah.
It wasn't cheap.
And that was almost all the money we had left.
Yeah.
So
then we flew to Caracas, spent about a day there, and then we flew to Barranquilla, and that was the only place to fly into at that time, I guess. And then we had a bus trip, like a day-long bus trip over to Cartagena, mm-hmm. Colombia.
That was an exciting bus trip with all the turtles, the chickens, and all the animals on the bus.
Yeah, those chicken buses are still really all over the place in South and Central America. Because you can do it on like a nice mm-hmm. bus that like has a seat that lays back and stuff like that, or you can go really cheap and do it on those.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't know, I've done it on both, and I really like the... I like both.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then we got into Cartagena. You've been there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, all that was there then was the old city, or the walls,
mm-hmm.
the big wall that was around
mm-hmm.
the old city, and then the city within it, the peninsula that goes out. I don't know if it's to the north or what direction out of town. There was nothing there.
Really?
No high rises. No nothing.
Because I think I had sent you pictures.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's all built
it's
up.
It's just huge
we
condos.
Were there before.
Oh yeah, yeah. Even then though, it was a destination for people from mm-hmm. Bogota and down inland in Colombia to come up there to the coast to vacation. So even but they must have been staying in town because we found with a woman and her daughter,
mm-hmm.
we found they rented us a room for a month. And so we just stayed with them in Cartagena.
That's so cool. Yeah, that was a long journey.
Mm-hmm.
Then it gets to be a battle because as cool as it is and as fun as those trips are, you just are used to what life is like.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes a challenge to go for that amount of time.
Right. Yeah,
it was 3 months.
You're ready to come home. You're ready to come home.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So yeah, we had a nice... And we spent Christmas there in Cartagena.
Really? We bought these hangings. Woven hangings, and we hung them on a tall tree, and that was our Christmas tree. We had a starfish.
I went diving, got a starfish, and dried it out, and that was on. We put that on top of our Christmas tree.
And then was it in Barranquilla where we bought all that stuff that we?
No. That remember we took a long bus ride up into the mountains and went to that little village and bought all that stuff.
Where all the guys rode in on their horses.
Yeah,
their
there was no motorized vehicles at all. We got off except for the bus we went in town on, and then it came through later in the afternoon. So we'd spent all day in this town, and they specialize in making these beautiful, beautiful wall hanging things. And so we went there specifically for that. But when we looked around, we thought, wow, people riding in out of town on horses and mules.
Yeah.
This is like the Old West. Mm-hmm. Tying them up, you know, and then doing whatever they come in town to do.
That was quite an adventure, too. And then we went back up to Cartagena and decided it was time to come home because mm-hmm. we'd had to call Betty and get some money.
But again, it was another $500, mm-hmm. I think.
And then just to get out of the country.
So we had to call home, and they wired the money down.
Mm-hmm. That was a happy
day. And we left there, I guess it must have been on the 27th or 28th of December, and it was like 90.
Yeah.
We walked got out of the airport in Minneapolis, and it was 20 below.
Just like when you came back from Thailand.
I mean, it was over 100 degree temperature difference.
And then nobody was there to pick us up, so we actually slept on a cot.
That's all right. No regrets?
No.
No. Mm-mm. No.
It really cemented our relationship, I think. When you travel like that with somebody,
you learn them,
and you really get close because you're totally dependent on them.
You really throw the relationship in the deep end.
Either you make it or break it.
So thank you so much to Barry and Gloria, and I think I can speak for everyone to say that how wild it is to hear how different things were compared to now and how lucky we are to have the ease of travel now.
It does.
And also we'd like to dedicate obviously this episode to Gloria. May she rest in peace. What a lovely lady.
What a fascinating tale of just a different way of doing things back then. I just absolutely loved hearing about it. So a little bit of an update. We have released our last travel video from this trip, sadly. No more footage.
No.
But Sri Lanka is out. It is beautiful. It is just an unbelievable set of just views that we were able to capture, and that country has endless things to photograph and make video from. So we were very lucky for that. Leanne did an awesome job editing that. So check out the website, smallworldspodcast.com, to look at that. And keep on keeping on, people.
Keep on keeping on in quarantine.